right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast NBA Podcast. My name is Keith. Here, once again, all by myself, for a little solo special edition show with Corbin Smith. We have a long and kind of scattered conversation. We talk a good bit about Star Trek, so hopefully you enjoyed it. It's something a little bit different. It's not as focused. We do talk about the Portland Trailblazers, but it's loose. It's loose, guys. Anyway, before we get to that, I want to tell you guys about Fan Essentials. Fan Essentials is a subscription service that delivers unique team gear to your front door every month. They pick out all the goodies so you don't have to, and will just send stuff that you want for your favorite team, for the NFL, NBA, or Major League Baseball. Go to fanessentials.net, use the code FBBF on your order, and you will get 30% off that order, and we get a couple dollars to help keep the lights on here at the Baby Dungeon. So go to fanessentials.net, get all the essentials you need.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rayfuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
My guest today is the host of the Take It or Break It podcast and a writer for Vice Sports and a few other places, Mr. Corbin Smith. Corbin, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah. It's a serious question. I'm not just being flippant. You can tell me how you are.
Yeah, well, I would never be. You know, today I was at the library.
Yep.
I like to walk up there for exercise sometimes, it's about a mile and a half away, and I was in there getting a book. What did I get? Oh, I got James Baldwin, a collection of his essays.
Okay.
And somebody said, oh, hey, I recognize that voice. And they walked out, and it was a friend of mine's mother, works at the library. We speak when we're at the library.
Right. Usually.
And I said, oh, how's Jeff? And she was like, oh, he never calls me. And she said, how are you? And I said, kind of terrible, because I'm still not terrible because of the election. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
Not to brag or anything. I'm a very sensitive young man. But I mean, I don't know. I made a quince apple crisp tonight, so that was pretty good.
You made a what?
A quince apple crisp. You know, quinces.
Yeah.
A quince is, it's like an apple, but it tastes like a flower. And it's also like made out of wood almost.
So it's a specific type of apple?
No, it's not a type of apple. It's sort of like it's kind of like it's almost like a prehistoric apple. It's a little like an apple. They're related, but it's not a type of apple.
Well, so someone I was speaking to recently from the Northwest actually was telling me about the apple they were eating, and it was a kind of apple I'd never heard of. So I've very commonly now been not knowing what people are talking about when they're saying some kind of apple thing.
It's fancy apple season here in the Pacific Northwest. my favorite is, I can't remember what it's called. There are some variations that are called like Pink Lady or something. It's got like a red skin. It's got like a greenish skin, and you bite into it, and it's got red flesh. Red flesh. it's a little tart. I prefer a tart apple personally. So
something we do in our podcast, and I know you're tangentially aware of our podcast because I asked you to be on the podcast a long time ago. And then recently you checked in and were like, hey, do you still have a podcast? And so I was like, yeah, let's do this.
Well, I knew you had a pod. I just said, would you have me on? I wasn't like,
no.
Yeah.
I'm just messing.
No. Yeah. And my podcast used to be on HP.
Right. So the common history, or at least when I found out about you, I can't remember if I heard your podcast first or I found you on the Twitter.com first, but I'd listened to your podcast, Bizcast Ball, and I thought it was funny. I enjoyed it. And because of that podcast that was on Harvard Paroxysm, I emailed the guys over at Harvard Paroxysm, was like, hey, do you want to have our podcast? And they were like, your podcast, we listened to some clips and it didn't talk about basketball. And I was like, well, you had this other podcast, Bizcast Ball? I didn't talk about basketball at all. And they're like, huh, yeah, that's true. So I was citing your podcast, and I feel like
about it. Oh, good. That's good.
Yeah. I feel like
good. Did I have an episode where I didn't talk about basketball?
There was some podcast. I remember there was one episode I listened to that I felt like most of the episode was about music theater and cannibalism. And like it just, those were the commonly, they kept coming back to that. Like I felt like maybe there was a skeleton outline of MBA questions. But it was always kind of falling back into some form of...
Yeah, I think that sounds like a Bob episode.
Yeah.
There was definitely one with Patrick where me and Patrick spent like 20 minutes talking about Inherent Vice or something along those lines. Yeah, I'm not a very disciplined podcaster. If you saw me right now, I'm literally sitting in my chair with my feet kicked up on something wearing cool shades... And skateboarding.
Well, I will say one thing from your podcast and from your earlier mention of James Baldwin essays is I do, when I listen to you talk, I do feel intimidated with how unwell read I am. I kind of gave up reading. And so I'm like these guys are always citing things. I don't know what they're talking about. Like, I don't know what authors write.
You know, if it makes you feel better, I myself feel like I'm a big fat idiot who doesn't read anymore. So,
well, I mean, I feel like there was a time in my life where I knew enough authors. Like I used to read, but I also knew enough where I could hold a cocktail conversation about the stuff I was supposed to be able to hold a cocktail conversation about, like with the authors and the things, but that's all gone. It's all been replaced by useless MBA stats. So since you are vaguely familiar with our podcast, we do talk about our breakfasts. Did you have a breakfast today?
I did. What I do is I wake up and I take my pill and flax oil and I meditate for an hour and then I eat breakfast.
Yeah.
And so I did that and I had you know, it was actually an interesting breakfast day. I scrambled some eggs and I was kind of planning on having scrambled eggs. But what I do before I scramble eggs is I'll run them under hot water for a few minutes to get the yolk a little more malleable. Yep. And so I did that and I noticed when I put them in the pan that they kind of spread out in omelet formation. And I was like, ooh, that's interesting. So I shredded some cheese. I put them in there, flipped it over, had a not terrible omelet and a piece of toast. And with the toast, what I do is I cook the eggs and I get them off there. And then I put the toast on the griddle instead of putting it in a toaster. So it, sucks up some of those powerful flavors.
It sounds amazing.
Thank you. I'm amazing.
Well, I mean, it sounded inspired. Good. It sounded like those eggs were asking to be an omelet. They presented themselves to you. And
yeah,
they were like,
yeah, omelet. That was their destiny. Yeah. And I fulfilled that for
them.
And then I stuck it in my belly.
You did it how you're supposed to do it.
My tum-tums.
So tell us about your podcast some. Tell listeners about the Take It or Break It. I'd say two and a half I've listened to.
It's the sports takes game show of your dreams or your nightmares. I have two guests on. It's actually a scheduling nightmare. And
I can only imagine. Yeah.
Every time I'm hitting up people's DMs and being like, "Can you be on the show?" I just feel like a real jerk because I always what I do is I prepare some questions about all sports topics, soccer, cricket. What are other sports? Basketball.
Yeah, sports.
Baseball. The kabaddi, you know what kabaddi is?
Kabaddi? No.
It's like, it's kind of like Red Rover a little bit. It's like high level Red Rover.
Is it televised?
It's, you know, you can catch it on ESPN3. It's one of those.
Okay.
from time to time. They just had the World Cup of Kabaddi. I hope it's called Kabaddi, but it's something along those lines. And, and what I'll do is I'll come up with a question, and then they'll both answer the question, and then I'll assign points and a winner. And then there's a trivia round at the end, because I love trivia. I love it.
That's good. So, yeah, so people, you can check your podcast feeds Thursday night. Get that Take It or Break It. Get that Sports Take Game Show.
Yeah, it's over on the iTunes.com, or you can go TOBTIOBI. Libsyn.com. That's right. I'm paying for a Libsyn subscription. Not to brag or anything. I have some disposable income. I'm a professional writer, so I can write it off. Also, admit, like I have trouble motivating myself to do things, and if I'm paying money to do it, then if I don't do it, then I effed up in a way that made it so I lose money.
Well, so I hear what you're saying, but I feel like I do that enough in my life where I'm like a procrastinator and or like field musician where like I'm like, if I buy this thing here, this will make me use this. Like if I buy this audio interface, I will learn how to use this program. And then I'm like, and then like I feel good that I actually bought the thing, and then I don't do it. So then I feel bad again. But I don't know. That's just
normally, you know what? Normally that is the case for me. But if I have a subscription,
yeah,
I feel like, I don't know. I feel like it's nudging me a little bit. I hope. I don't know. You know, who knows? Who knows anything in these chaotic times?
Well, so wrapping it around or steering it towards basketball, you are a Portland Trailblazer fan, and I'm curious.
Yeah.
You say yeah? Yeah. Energetically or half-heartedly?
You know, it's weird because I write about the team, and I always feel weird saying I'm a fan because I write about the team sometimes, and even though I'm like the least serious basketball writer in human existence, I still feel weird like doing like the Bill Simmons thing and being like, yeah, I'm just a fan like you. Cause you know, I like to veil myself in objectivity, even if I don't necessarily have any, but yeah, I like the Trailblazers. My mom likes the Trailblazers for sure.
So how did you feel? I'm curious how you felt about the Trailblazers coming in to this season based on their gigantic offseason of splurging out cash for the likes of Evan Turner and other guys who were already on the team.
I have kind of a multifaceted answer to this.
Bring it.
I think that there was probably no team in the league who was more negatively impacted by the cap spike than the Blazers.
I think the Thunder would argue with you, but I also hear what you're saying.
Is that even a basketball team, though?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really just a money laundering operation.
Yep.
For oil barons, but or natural gas barons. Sorry. Sorry to big oil. Okay, other than the Thunder, I would say that I think the Blazers are the team that were the most profoundly negatively impacted by the cap spike because they've basically spent the last 2 years like being really responsible with cap clearing. And so they just had a ton of space. And in a normal offseason when everybody would be flying around like chickens with their heads cut off, trying to cut space to sign Al Horford or other basketball players.
Right.
And so instead of being in a position where their thriftiness was rewarded with the ability to very easily sign a marquee player, everybody else had an obscene amount of money as well at the same time. And so it just didn't mean anything. And then, I mean, re-signing most of the team, I didn't feel so bad about. It was a pretty good team last year. There's some pretty good players there. Signing Evan Turner, that was probably a bad idea.
Well, he's been hit or miss so far early in the year, but also Isaiah Thomas.
Mostly miss.
I know. I'd say Isaiah Thomas. He already pointed out that the Celtics were missing them. They're saying we're lacking our Evan Turner off the bench to hold things together.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope that that wasn't actually what was holding the Celtics together. I mean, like, if that's the case, maybe the Celtics need to be given magic water and told it's Evan Turner, and they can drink it and get better with extra confidence. And then somebody will be like, it was just regular water that Evan Turner was in you all along. Because Evan Turner is probably is not great at, I mean, you know, I try to be equanimous, but he's been pretty bad.
He gets kind of, I agree with you where I don't think he's that good, but he definitely, and he definitely gets a bad rap. People like kind of like dumping on him. They're like, this guy,
he does, he's not, he does get a bad rap, and it's because he's not very good.
You know,
And maybe kind of terminally unwatchable. I can never decide on that one, but yeah, last night was probably his best game, and he still took way more shots than he had points.
Right.
So, he's not a, one of the things they were trying to sell us, me. What's our GM's name? I'm sorry.
Neil O'Shea.
Neil O'Shea. He came to my house.
Yep.
He opened up my door. He took me in. I took him into the backyard, and he said, look, this Evan Turner, he's a great playmaker. I don't know. He's not a great playmaker. He's fine. He's like sub Andre Iguodala playmaker, I guess. And that's not good. That's not great. Yeah, he's better than me at making plays, I guess. I mean, not on the ladies. Not to brag or anything.
We obviously in the scheme of the NBA, not great of a ball handler.
No, like Jimmer's probably a better ball handler than him.
The Jimmer?
But yeah, Jimmer for I wrote about Jimmer today.
So, okay.
But so I have Jimmer on the mind. But like but Jimmer's also totally unqualified to be an NBA player for other reasons.
Yeah.
But too handsome, for instance. He's been pretty bad, and that not being able to shoot. Oh boy. It is.
It doesn't really fit in the pace and space, right? That everyone else is doing.
No, it does not. And the Blazers were super pace and spacey last year, and have since Stotts got there, I think, been one of the on the low sort of better schemed, better coached pace and space teams in the league.
Yeah.
People don't talk about it because not to sound like a Blazers edge commenter, but people never talk about the Blazers. But they don't. And I'm sorry, it was Keith. Go ahead. I didn't.
Oh, no. So you say people don't talk about the Blazers. I will say Dame Lillard has some insane Twitter fans, like online fans. I don't know if you feel this in the Portland bubble, but like Dame Lillard has stans that are like, they're not quite Kobe stans. But like, or they're not also like Philadelphia, if you insult the process, come after you. But people will come after you if you say anything bad about Damian Lillard.
The other day on Twitter.com, I don't want to sit here and talk about social media. Blazer fans are very sensitive.
Yep.
People. Everybody's just out here trying to live and love and get by. But, there's definitely... I don't disagree with you. I will say this about Lillard. And then I'll tell my Twitter story, even though Twitter stories are lame. I don't think Lillard's a perfect player. He gets caught on picks all the time. That's actually probably his biggest problem, is that he stinks at defense, but he's pretty good at most.
Right.
There's like a charisma about him that really makes you believe in him. Everything about that dude just screams like hard work and values and truth and justice. People don't understand this on a national scale. He's got a very John Cena vibe about him in that way. Like, he really believes in fair play and reaching down into your guts and pulling out your victories from your heart. and things of that nature. And I think that just really turns people on. You know, I think that really attracts people to him in a way that it doesn't for a lot of different players. And part of that is also because he played with Aldridge so long, and Aldridge is just so antiseptic and so, you know, miserable to watch. and you know, living with that counterpoint, and then Aldridge leaving and the team still managing to stay afloat. I mean, you know, he's just an inspiring dude. Anyway, on Twitter.com, you got to make sure I don't talk about this too long. I tweeted as a joke, Steph will never beat Lillard in a playoff series.
Oh, I saw this. This was classic Twittering.
And the Golden State fans were very irritated with me.
Right.
Because Sam Infrabotti, he gave me that old quote retweet.
Oh yeah.
Next thing you know, I got all these Curry fellas in the mention. I'm just being doughheaded back to them. Like, Curry didn't play in the series because he was scared of Lillard, he was injured.
What?
things of that nature. Look, I just like to have fun online.
No crime.
Whether it's, you know, being mean to Golden State fans on Twitter or watching pornography, either thing, I just love to do it. I don't actually love to watch pornography. I find it alienating. But anyway, Keith.
No, maybe it is Damian Lillard's sense of fair play that keeps him from fighting over those screens very hard. He's like, you know what? This is a really good screen and I'm going to respect it.
There's good fundamentals here. I'm going to pace myself on this bad boy. He just wants to support the evolution of fundamentals in the game.
Yep. Well, so,
you know,
once Aldridge took off,
he's not a cheater like Steph Curry. He's like, somebody's covering me, I'll take a step back. You know, that's not an honorable way to play. what Steph does. It's not what Worf would do. You know, if Worf watched Steph Curry and Damian Lillard, I think we all know what side Worf would be on. And why do you, listener, want to be against Worf?
I always wondered how the Klingons felt about long range weapons.
Oh, they must hate
like
them.
They would want to fly.
In Enterprise, there's a whole thing about how Klingons like to get in your face and F you up with a battle F.
Right. And so I always wondered, when they're in their Birds of Prey, are they like, this is cowardly to shoot at another ship. We need to just run up into that ship and like try to board it. Like, I assume they would always just want to board, or like, you know.
Yeah, they always want to board. You'll recall in Search for Spock, when they board Kirk's ship.
Yeah.
Kirk, of course, the wily Star Trek hero, self-destructed the ship while they were standing on.
Got him.
And blew up.
He used their
and then they took the bird of prey.
Yeah.
To Vulcan.
This is a lot of Star Trek 3 spoilers. A lot of Star Trek 3 spoilers.
Yeah, sorry. And then they returned Spock's Cotter to him. And then in the fourth movie, they have to bring the bird of prey back to Earth. And then they have to, because there is a whale controlled space whale. Sorry. Controlled probe destroying Earth because the humpback whales, which have gone extinct because of human malfeasance, they're not there anymore to respond to the probe signal. The probe begins boiling Earth's ocean, so they have to take the bird of prey that they got in the last movie, and they have to ride it around the sun, take it back in time, and find a whale.
Yeah.
You may recall that happens in Star Trek 4, The Voyage Home.
Right.
And then in the fifth movie, Kirk has to kill God.
I like to pretend the fifth movie doesn't exist. The fifth movie was the first movie I saw as a kid in the theater, where I went to the theater, and when it was over, like, up until that point in my life, I did not know movies could not be good. Like, I thought going to the movie was just always awesome. And like, that was the first movie I saw as a kid, and I saw it, and I was like, I think that was bad. And it's like, yeah. So that was like my first impression of being disappointed leaving the movie theater.
I got into Star Trek really late in life.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But, I mean, I do know why, but ask me about it on Twitter, I'll tell you. the fifth, everyone's always like, ah, the fifth one stinks. And I watched it, and it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but the scene where Kirk says, why would God need a starship? It's just wonderful.
That's great. I don't know.
And it is still Star Trek. It's not like you watch it and you're like, this isn't Star Trek. It's still Star Trek. I mean, it's not good Star Trek. It's like second season Voyager kind of Star Trek sometimes, but it's still Star Trek.
That's fair. Hey, speaking of the new Star Trek, whatever the
sixth movie?
No, the
excellent.
Underrated. Oh, Undiscovered Country is incredible. Incredible.
Undiscovered Country is so good.
The soundtrack, which is a complete Gustav Holst ripoff, is still very powerful. Very, very powerful. But the new CBS Star Trek series, they mentioned they're going to maybe have some alien nudity, maybe some swearing. I'm curious how you feel about that.
I don't know how I feel about swearing, because one of the ideas behind Star Trek is that nobody swears anymore.
Exactly.
And it's an enormous contrivance. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. I mean, it was fitting, like this. Okay, this will get this.
Alien nudity, I'm pretty much okay with. I mean, Star Trek has always been kind of at least a little about sex. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like Star Trek doesn't have a lot of sex in it. There's a lot of sex in a Star Trek. You know what I mean? It's never, like sometimes it's sort of sublimated and things like that. But, I mean, everybody on Star Trek has hormones. That's what I'll say. And I think that going in that direction is fundamentally respectful.
Well, I don't remember well enough. Some of my friends were talking about how maybe it would be funny if there was like alien races where it turns out we'd been looking at their genitalia this whole time. We shouldn't know it. Like, weren't the Ferengi ears perhaps like sex organs?
The Ferengi are sex organs. They're just androgynous zones.
Erogenous. Yeah. We will call them androgynous zones. Sorry, that's pretty good.
They're just androgynous zones. They're not sex organs. In one episode, Kes's mother is giving birth to Kes, and it turns out that Kes's sex organs are on her back.
Oh, I don't remember Kes. Was this a Deep Space Nine?
Oh, it's Voyager.
Voyager. I haven't seen Voyager. This is I'm not current. If it came out,
have you seen Deep Space Nine?
So I watched a lot of Deep Space Nine when it was out, like when it was on TV. I want to say that was high school for me, but I don't remember it very well. And everyone's telling me it's good. It's like has some serialized elements. It's all about religion and stuff. And so like it sounds. I haven't watched it, and I've been meaning to dive in because I don't remember it very well.
It's really good. It's on Netflix, guys.
It's on Netflix.
I recommend Star Trek: Deep Space Nine. We were talking about basketball, though.
Yeah, bringing it back to basketball. What can you tell me about Jake Layman? He seems to have been rendered in like one of those Westworld human sewing machine creation kits to be like the most stereotypical Portland baller ever.
I don't know if I would say that. But
I mean, I'm not saying like Portland basketball player. I'm saying like he looks like he would be cast as a man who owns a coffee shop on a soap opera. Like,
I actually think that he's jacked enough that he would be like a sort of amorous yoga teacher.
Yeah. Okay. There you go.
But anyway,
like in like a silk stocking, little soft focus.
Well, no, yeah, no, just like. It's like a slice of life where this dude's wife is going to yoga and then she has sex with Jack Layman. I don't know. But I mean,
this guy's a new.
I mean, and you don't really blame her. And like, maybe they give Jake Layman, sex yoga guy, some unexpected depths.
Yeah.
If I were making it, that's what I would do. And then maybe they all get together and they sort of discover that polyamory works for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what the movie's about. It's not like a cheating movie. Or maybe it kind of starts out that way, but then, like, as it goes on, it sort of is like, oh, you can't fulfill all my needs. I can't fulfill all your needs. Maybe we need to, you know, exist in this space where we recognize that and sort of recognize that that's healthy. You know, even though that wasn't what we grew up with or anything like that, you know, that's probably what I would do. If I was writing a movie about somebody's wife having sex with Jake Layman, who was a yoga instructor in this movie.
In my mind, but, in my mind, the wife, so Jake Layman would be the yoga instructor, but she'd already be married to Myers Leonard. Like, I think that'd be the tension. Oh. Is the world big enough for both Jake Layman and Myers Leonard?
Oh, certainly. They're completely different types of white basketball players. But I guess not really. They are both tall and they shoot three-pointers. Okay, what do you need to know about Jake Layman? Well,
I was going to say there are no stats that say he's not the best player ever. So what were you going to say?
He had a relatively unproductive night last night. So that might, so his small sample size glory. Might
oh,
be
is it already over? That's too bad.
He's starting to get rotation minutes. I mean, he flashes a confident shot, and he's not Evan Turner. So it's hard not to like pin all your hopes and dreams on him, for those two reasons alone.
Well, he's the only guy without a really huge contract going into the next like 3 or 4 years. So,
you know, Myers's contract isn't that big.
Myers' contract was the form of NBA charity. They offered it to him the year before. He declined it, thinking he would be good. He was horrible last year, / hurt, whatever your story wants to be. The Memphis Grizzlies left him uncovered in that playoff series. He was awesome. He got paid. Or no, they offered him money. He declined it. He bet on himself, as they say. And then he had a completely nothing season last year. And then out of the goodness of the Trailblazers' hearts, when this man had no offers, they're like, you know what? We'll offer you the same contract again. And he's like, thank you.
Because it's not a bad contract.
It was a heartwarming story in this cold professional sports world.
It's just totally not a bad contract in the current cap environment. $10 million a year is like... it's like $6 million,
right?
And like, and sort of our previous cap situation.
Yeah, and it's going to be like Brian Cardinal.
I'm a capologist over here.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just a perfectly acceptable contract for a sort of role player type dude with upside. That's my opinion. Okay, that's my opinion about Myers Leonard's contract. And you know what? He's been good. At times, I don't know. He had at the beginning of his career, I was like, "Who is this guy? What is this? This is ridiculous. But then eventually, he starts to flash a 3-point shot, and then you're kind of like, "Nah, well."
Well, he did.
He's gonna shoot
threes. He threw out that he had a 50-40-90 season, and then I saw him walking around Las Vegas with like salmon shorts and a dog, and I'm like, "Who is this? This guy?"
Does he have a little dog?
No, I think he's got a big dog. He's got like a husky or something. We're like, why is a husky in the hot weather? Come on now. I could be wrong.
He doesn't usually live in hot weather.
Right.
I don't know if you've heard.
Lives in the pretty temperate. The dampens. Yeah. Cloudy northwest.
It's a little chilly.
Yeah.
The summers are beautiful. They don't tell you that.
I've only been to Portland I've been in May and August. Both lovely. Lovely.
Yeah, the springs are okay. The summers, though, I just made a kissing noise.
And no, I thought that was just my Skype static, but I'll make a note that was kissing noise. Well, so, hey, to wrap it up, what are your hopes for this Portland team?
I hope they learn how to play a modicum of defense because their defense has been bad enough that. It's hard not to look at their current success and think it's going to regress. They have had an incredibly bad defense.
Right.
It's just by far clearly their biggest problem so far.
Do you think they can, if they shore up the defense, do you think they're in the play? Like they're probably as they're shooting for that 4 seed in the West. Like, do you think they're better than say like the Jazz and the Rockets and the Thunder and all the other kind of,
I will say this, there's been so many changes in the West this year that I, a little piece of me is not sure how good anybody is.
Yeah, and it's still early in the year.
I think the Warriors are at the very least going to shape up into a 60 some odd win team or whatever.
Yeah.
Chris Paul is playing a little bit above his head right now, but he is excellent. And I think that especially in the beginning of the year where there hasn't been a lot of continuity out West, that the Clippers have sort of found an advantage in that. And they'll probably end as a top seed. Who else?
I mean, the Spurs still hanging. They have your boys.
The Spurs will probably be good. Great by the end of the year, at least. That's what always seems to happen. And then after that, I guess I would say I think they're in that mix. No. I think maybe the Jazz might shape up. I overrate the Jazz probably, but
yeah,
I think that they are going to be very good by the end of the year.
Yep. Well, hey, Corbin, thanks so much for your time. Enjoyed talking to. Tell people you're at Corbin A. Smith on the Twitter.
I'm at Corbin A. Smith on Twitter.com.
And you write lots of some funny things over on The Shocker, I know. The Shocker has some very funny stories.
Yeah. I write for The Shocker sometimes. I'm a founder over there. When I got back from meditation camp, I was a little.
I did. Tell people about your meditation camp. I heard about it on one of your podcasts.
I talked about it too much.
That was all legit? Because sometimes on our podcast, I know that we like to enhance our stories a little bit. But
That's all real.
Yeah.
I was looking for an avenue to improve my control of my mind. I guess you could say it like that.
Okay.
And I went to the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, which is sort of a hippy dippy college up there. And, you know, no grades, anything like that. And something that a lot of people there did is that they went to this retreat on Onalaska, Washington, where they learned the secrets of Vipassana meditation. And what you do is you go and for 10 days you do not talk. And you just meditate for 11 hours a day and eat two meals before noon and a little bit of fruit at 5. And all you do is walk around, wait to meditate for a really long time. And you do that for 9 straight days without talking. And in the middle of the 10th day, you get to talk again. And it's super weird, but because you haven't talking. So do I still meditate? Yeah.
No. I was curious. What is it like? Are you seeing many other people or are you kind of isolated?
Okay. So, that's a question for which I have a weirdly specific answer. You're not supposed to see other people on a certain level. If you were doing the entire retreat, 100% ideally, everybody would be slotted into like little spaces where they don't see anybody meditate or anything like that. But you kind of mosey around and mill about with other people, but you don't talk to them. You're not even supposed to like look at them and go, or like, you're not even like supposed to give them head nods or anything like that. The idea is that you can't like write or read or anything. The idea is that you are like, in your head, like that's where you live now, buddy, is like in there, and there's no way out. So it's really stressful, but very rewarding. It's super stressful.
So
people sometimes go, I think, looking for like peace or something, but that's not the place to find it, because does not take long for you to dig into your mind and realize that there is not a lot of peace there.
Would you recommend it? You recommend it. After doing it, you recommend it. Would you ever do it again?
It's crazy. The second I got out of it, I was like, never again. No way. Not doing it again. And I've been practicing for 2 months and thinking about what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. And I literally, the second I realized, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to go again, aren't I? I'm gonna do. I think most people when they come to that revelation, they're like, "Yeah, I'm gonna do it." They're really excited about it, but I'm just like, "Oh my god, I'm gonna do it again, aren't I? I'm gonna go to Alaska and spend 10 days in my own head again." I don't know. I'm okay with it. I'm starting to be like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go again." I actually have this weekend. I'm going to a class in Portland. It's just a day, but. Yeah, I'm going to do it again. I'm not happy about it, but.
Well, that sounds good. Well, hey, thanks so much for spending time with us, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon, Corbin.
Oh, hopefully. Keith, have a good day.
All right, thanks to Corbin for his time. Do check out his podcast. It's pretty funny. Take It or Break It. Some more of what he brought to our show, if you like that kind of thing. Chuck and John will be back very soon. Thanks for listening. You guys are the best. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.